You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, welcome to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Joining us today in the studio, Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Well, hello, good morning. On Thursday, 9/19/24, thank you for listening. WTCM, can we say that, Dennis? TCM, AM 580, great to hear, thank you. At 10 o'clock on Thursday, if you are listening to the rebroadcast on Saturday, it is a rebroadcast at 9 a.m. And we have lots to talk about today. First of all, Ron, great to see you, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. First of all, joining us, Nathan Prout.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Nathan?
Great to have you. Great to have you. Financial advisor and manager of client accounts. And then Deanne Jennings, our director of operations. Good morning, Deanne.
Good morning, Dennis. It's a pleasure to be here. What a beautiful September morning. I love September in Traverse City.
Yeah. My gosh, this September is spinning everyone's head around, I think.
It's so beautiful.
All the people that normally are loving the lake are still loving it. It's warm.
Yeah, I said the beaches are active.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah. It's just too nice. Well, thank you for listening. If you do have a question of a financial nature that you'd like us to give it a shot, we'd love to hear from you, either text or call.
You can use the same number for either platform. You can text us or call 947-0023. That's the 231 area code, 947-0023.
Help clients prepare for potential tax policy changes. Can we say that quickly? So our subject for this morning is preparing for potential tax changes. Everyone kind of gets, I think, that they're probably due to change in January of 26. With changes to income and estate taxes, and by the way, this is an article from Capital Group, American Funds. With changes to income and estate taxes likely coming our way after the elections, you may be anxious to respond with big wealth planning moves. However, be careful with doing too much. Be, if you will, as circumspect about this as you can. You can't predict the future, is the comment here, but you can help put what seems like chaos into context and help folks, if you will. They're speaking to financial advisors in this particular article. What I'm saying is think about this from a more logical standpoint, perhaps. Number one, tackle estate planning concerns with strategic gifting. Here's one thing to think about. Now, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, TCJA, as it's called, expires at the end of 25. And the loss of one particular provision is getting a lot of attention. That is the historically high lifetime gift exemption, which is currently at $13.6 million. This is what would allow potentially a couple to pass an estate worth up to $26 million without current tax. Now, they're thinking that that amount's going to go in half. to about $6 or $6.5 million. Currently, the gifting amount that you can give to one person can give to another, is $18,000 per person. So that's without filing the Form 706. That's the IRS Form 706 that simply declares that you gave more than that. It doesn't mean that you owe any tax on it. So there's a lot of confusion about that. You can gift more than $18,000. It's just that you, if you do gift more than that, you have to report it.
And the recipient would have to pay the tax then?
No.
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 No. Why did
See,
you have to report
an
it?
An illogical then? Conclusion, which is part of the misconception or miscommunication, if you will, about that.
Why would one have to report to the government if they gave a gift to somebody?
Because it's over the 18,000 limit and they want to keep track, given that it is counted against the total of the 13.6 per person. Okay?
I mean, if you gave it in increments, they're going to keep track of it?
If you give it in increments of less 18,000 or less, they're not going to keep track of it. 18,000 is the free amount that doesn't cause you to have to track it. Mm. Otherwise, if it is, what's interesting, it qualifies for up to the 13.6. So theoretically, one person could gift up to $13.6 million without having to pay any estate tax on that amount. Not saying that they'd want to. Mm-hmm. Just theorizing. First of all, ask yourself a question when approaching this sort of thing. What do you want your wealth to achieve? What can you actually afford to give away? And do you want to gift appreciated assets to children? Possibly there's a mutual fund in your portfolio. It's irritated you for years because you've got significant gains in it and you don't really use it for anything. It just has continued to grow. And you would love to see your children get a small portion of it, perhaps. Now, this is radical. Dennis, why haven't you ever talked about gifting before? I don't know. No, I don't recall ever having discussed this to any depth. So this is a great way to gift appreciated assets. Let the children then pay the capital gains at their rates if they decide to liquidate the asset. And next, consider paying education and health care expenses for others. Direct payments of tuition and medical expenses, no matter the amount, they are not subject to gift taxes and can be a great way to make an immediate impact on the lives of recipients. So if you want to gift for the education, let's say you've got a daughter or a grandchild who are at a higher education institution and you want to help cover the tuition, if you give the money direct to the institution, it's not counted against that $18,000. So there's no income tax for them, no income deduction for you, no income tax deduction for you. But it in essence, allows you to take some of the money out of your estate and help them out if you'd like to do that.
Okay. I'm always amazed at you can take an action. Mm-hmm. But depending on how you characterize that, what form you fill out or whatever, you may or may not be taxed.
Exactly.
You take an action, but the government says, if you're taking it for this reason, we're going to tax you.
Right.
If you take it for that reason, we're not going to tax you. It all has to be kept track of.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So there are some yins and yangs to it. By the way, we are having Ed Slott next week.
Yes, we are. We are so excited. Oh. He's going to be live.
Live Ed Slott next week. Mm-hmm. So put that on your calendar. That'll be September 26th. Mm-hmm. Ed Slott will be on as our guest. Talking about tax planning for year-end tax planning, the importance of the Roth conversion, and other issues, too, related to taxes. We're also going to have John Sluice on later, too.
CPA.
CPA. Talking after we have him on regarding the scams issue, we're also going to be discussing tax year and tax planning with him as well. That's in November. And we have those dates here somewhere in my notes. Here it is. Okay, here we go. Ed Slott's on next week. Laverna Whitcup and Dawn McConnell on October 24th. Bob Simpson from Social Security is on November 21st. And then John Sluice on December 12th. Okay. Then, lastly, develop a broader gifting strategy around 529 savings accounts. If you're worrying about the restrictions that come with 529 plans, think about the Secure Act 2.0. This allows you to convert 529 or them to convert 529 savings accounts into Roth retirement accounts without taxes or penalties. So if they have an overfunded 529 plan account or they simply don't use it for higher education, if the funds have been in there open for 15 years, and the amount to be rolled over has been in the account for at least 5 years, so 5 by 15, amounts up to the current contribution limit, $7,000, can be converted to Roths for them. So if there's a grandchild or a child with an account, let's say they're 22 years old, they've not used it for higher education, they could convert those extra 529 plan assets to a Roth IRA up to $35,000 to help fund their own Roth IRA and without any tax. So it can come out of their 529, go into their own retirement account after that period of time being in the 529.
As long as they have earned income as well, too.
Yes, they have to have earned income. Thank you. Thank you. So Nathan is covering how to plan for retirement if you're behind in your savings at middle age. And let's talk about what middle age is first, Nathan. What are they talking about here?
Well, people normally in their 40s and 50s is how they would define that.
All right.
So many middle-aged Americans feel unprepared for retirement, but it isn't too late to make a plan to boost your savings. Workers between 45 and 54 years old had a median account balance of roughly $60,000 in employee-sponsored retirement plans, such as 401ks at Vanguard Group in 2023. For most Americans, that is well below a common target of having roughly six times your salary saved for retirement by age 50.
And that, by the way, is not a small sum. So we were talking about this before the show. $50,000, obviously, if that's your income, times six, $300,000.
By the time you're 50.
Yeah. Whoa, pretty tall order for most.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually using our handy-dandy HP 12C here.
We're not sponsored by them yet.
No, not yet. We're looking for that. And taking a look at what it would take to get to that level, it was about, if you were starting at age 30, assuming an 8% compounded annualized rate of return, about $500 a month. So, not chump change.
No, not at all. Many financial advisors also say those in their 40s and 50s still have time to increase their savings rate and create a roadmap for their later years. Some workers, for instance, might have more funds available to build up their nest egg after their children leave home. The best day to start was yesterday, said Dan Ryan, a wealth manager and managing partner at another advisory firm. The second best day is today. So the first step many financial advisors recommend is a thorough analysis of your finances. Start with your spending. It might not be a fun exercise, but taking stock of your expenses can help you understand what you're spending on necessities and what you're spending on everything else.
And some of the things you may consider as necessities when they perhaps aren't.
Yeah, those software subscriptions get really sneaky in there, too. That allows you to estimate how much money you realistically need in retirement and where you could potentially cut back to stash away more money. A common guideline is that retirees can get by on about 80% of what they earned each year while working, though the actual number can vary from household to household. It's also important to tally up your retirement savings and your expected income. Sometimes people lose track of old employer 401ks from earlier in your career.
We've never seen that before.
Into new accounts.
Sorry, I just interrupted you, but I was joking. We see that relatively often.
Yeah. You can factor in other projected income sources, such as Social Security or any pensions. Now, of course, pensions are pretty rare in this day and age, but they do still exist. Once you know how much you think you will need in retirement and the funds you currently have, you can calculate how much you're missing. Using a target retirement age and benchmark rates for investment returns and inflation, work backward to find out how much more you need to save to meet your goal. Many brokerages and retirement plan providers, such as Fidelity or Vanguard, offer retirement calculators on their platforms to help with these sorts of planning situations.
Many times, if I can interject, it's just starting to get that habit started, to get going. So don't listen to sometimes the negative talk that can go on about saving. Well, I'm too old to save, or I'm too young to save, or I'm somewhere in between. You know, start somewhere.
That's right. And historically, retirees have had a low probability of running out of money if they withdraw 4% of their retirement savings in their first year of retirement and then adjust that amount for inflation in subsequent years. Some advisors say their clients often find themselves in a better spot than they originally thought after assessing their finances. A lot of people have just never really totaled everything up. So do that at the start of your wealth planning journey. So create a plan. Before going all in on retirement savings, one of the most important things you can do is tackle your high interest debt, such as unpaid credit card balances, and make sure you have an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months of living expenses.
So if your credit card is costing you 20%, per year. Obviously, it's not something that you should, it's something you should pay off first before saving for retirement.
That's correct, yep. Often those priorities are taken care of. Once those priorities are taken care of, make sure you are taking full advantage of your employer benefits. Are you maximizing your employer match on 401k contributions? Does your employer offer 401k matches for student loan repayments? Those are pretty rare, but they might start becoming more commonplace here. Or could a health savings account, commuter benefits, or other perks help you save more? HSAs are a very rare type of investment. If you have one, they are great to take advantage of. They are tax incentivized for the money going in and tax-free for withdrawals on the way out, as long as they are used for qualifying medical expenses.
So the only plan of its type that allows you to get a deduction going in and potentially tax-free coming out.
Correct.
The HSA plan, you bet.
But as Dennis was alluding to, then comes the hard work of saving. It can be difficult to rein in spending and save more of your paycheck. To make things easier, advisors recommend automating things as much as possible. So set your contributions to 401ks and transfers to retirement, brokerage, or savings accounts to occur automatically at a regular cadence. There's no magic in saving for retirement, said Kathleen Grace, chief executive of Fiduciary Family Office. You have to have the determination, and you're going to have to make sacrifices along the way. Americans 50 years old and over can put more money into a 401k or a similar employer-sponsored retirement plan through catch-up contributions. In 2024, those 50 and over can contribute as much as $7,500 on top of the $23,000 limit for everyone else. Beginning in 2026, those earning more than $145,000 will have to put their catch-up contributions into Roth accounts, meaning those contributions will be post-tax, but withdrawals in the future will be tax-free.
I think that's a great force, if you will. Obviously, the government's trying to collect some more taxable income from those folks, but the other side of it is that they're going to be able to accumulate more in Roth accounts within their 401ks, which means that those funds will come out tax-free at retirement, as Nathan just stated. So while these can be somewhat limiting, keep in mind the total amount that you could put in if you're over age 50 to a 401k plan is $2,500 a month. That's some serious change, most people would say. So $2,500 a month equals approximately $30,000 per year. Okay?
That's right. And while I'm talking on the next section, Dennis is going to tell you how much $2,500 a month would take to get to $1 million, assuming an 8% return.
All right. Let's do that. $1 million, as Ron just said, the winner, you know, and then assuming an 8% rate. And the N on that isn't right. So let's take a look at that again.
So,
keep talking.
Yeah.
$1 million. Thank you. Exactly. I like that quote.
So some advisors say putting more of your retirement funds in the stock market rather than being heavy on bonds could help boost your returns. Now, of course, it's important to keep your risk tolerance in mind for this. But keep in mind that higher projected gains also come with greater risk. Given the stock market can be volatile, a stock-heavy approach is better suited for money you won't need in the near term. And Dennis just ran those calculations. It would take over just over 16 years to hit that $1 million mark at $2,500 a month with an 8% return. So saving more isn't the only way to boost your retirement funds. You might consider pushing back your retirement age, working part-time in retirement, postponing taking your Social Security benefits, or downsizing your home to tap home equity if you own a house.
Okay, hang on a second. So I thought, what would 20 years do? So we looked at 16 years, it'd be $1 million. Mm-hmm. 20 years, four more years, almost $1.5 million.
Wow.
So the effect of compounding, there it is right there, $1.472 million. So the impact of that is just dynamic. Maybe you need to push some things back, but understanding the impact of compounding and its positive effect on your ability to have more flexibility when you retire. So making some sacrifices now, maybe they're not even tremendous because you've been a great saver. You've done all this sort of stuff. But it just gives you so much more flexibility to think about, oh, maybe I want to gift more to the kids or grandkids. All these things, it opens up a wider array of, frankly, complexity. That can be possibly the negative part of it. But it also opens up more opportunity for you to give charitably and all of the rest. It can really open up your world to say, oh my gosh, do I want to pass all of this on to my child or children? Or do I want to give a portion of it to charity in ways that I hadn't even considered or thought of before? That's where we can really have fun having these conversations with you as you talk about what could be some of my expanded views regarding my wealth and what I can do with it to leverage responsibly what I could do. It's an amazing conversation, I think.
That's right. Yeah. Looks like we have a couple of text questions here, too.
Yeah, I was going to say that Dennis said you put away $2,500 a month, which is
yes.
About $30,000 a year.
It is.
For 16 years, and yeah. You get $1 million.
You're right.
Assumed 8%.
Right.
So what you've really put in is $480,000, and you walk away with $1 million.
$1 million.
$1 million.
So it doubled the amount that you put in. That's a great. I was going to figure that out next. You know, what's your basis, what you put in? Yeah. $480. Let me just double check that.
Yeah, good idea. That's my math.
yeah, 16. Yeah, that is 480. Yep, right on the money.
So somebody said, I started my 401k in 1997. I was 39 years old. I stopped funding it in 2013 at 54 years old. So what's that? 15 years of funding it. I've left it alone. There is now $670,000 in that account.
Good job.
It's never too late to start, they say.
It isn't. It isn't. And, if I may, again, I've already said it. I'll say it again. Don't listen to the negative self-talk. Start somewhere and then increase it. That's the other part of it we didn't talk about. Increase the amount that you put in over time. As your income increases, as you may even get some bonuses because you're an incredible worker and or employee, that you're anticipating these bonuses. Slowly increase what you're putting in. You're not going to miss it anyway. It's just another instilling of another discipline that can wind up being so positive for you in the end. It's not just about the discipline either. It's about the benefits you're going to realize as a part of it. They're tremendous. Yeah.
I have another question. Question. Should I count my contributions into an HSA? What's an HSA? A health savings account.
Health savings account.
Should I count my contributions into an HSA part of my 15% save for retirement? I think after 65, you can withdraw money from an HSA for something other than medical. Is that money taxed after you're 65 if you're using it for non-medical?
It is taxable if you don't use it for medical expenses. So, you know, you want to be aware of the tax consequence coming out. And if you want to count it toward your 15%, that's up to you personally, if you will. But I would count it because it's going to be able to be used for the healthcare expenses you'll have after retirement. So try to keep that in terms of something that you're going to use for healthcare expenses and our other expenses related to healthcare that are fully deductible. Okay.
Well, we reached the stats.
The chorus.
Yes.
The statistics
have.
Yes,
portion.
Stats. DN.
We have. The Fed announced some big news yesterday. Rate cuts are back. On September 18th, the U.S. Federal Reserve cut the federal funds rate for the first time since March 3rd, 2020. That would end a streak of 4.5 plus years without a cut in rates, the second largest streak without such a cut in at least 50 years, trailing only the 10 plus year period from December 2008 through July 2019. And that source is Bespoke. So they cut 50 bips, Dennis.
Right.
What can you tell us what that means, how that would affect us?
Well, positive, mortgages are negative. Going to go down. Yeah, I was just talking to one of the staff people this morning. I don't want to mention her name because, you know, I didn't ask for approval for that, you know. So free with names there. But we're going to see mortgage rates come down right away. They've probably already been anticipating. I don't watch mortgage rates that closely. But current interest rates are going to come down. T-bills have already been on the wane, if you will. So we're going to see interest rates generally come down, I would say, another 0.3 to maybe a half, but they've already been anticipating this decline. So best guess, maybe 0.25, maybe 0.3%. So it's going to make a real difference in payments for folks who borrow money.
So possibly looking into refinancing?
Yes, and or those who have short-term savings. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see those rates start to come down as well. T-bills, even CD rates are going to start getting lower as well.
Only 2.5% of households across the entire country are utilizing 529 plans for their children's education, which Dennis kind of talked about today. That is an extremely low number considering how many people are getting a college education. This means parents could be leaving thousands of dollars to benefits on the table, if not even more, by not taking advantage of these plans, and that source is the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, as we discussed, the value of saving in those plans has increased dramatically because of their ability, the children's ability, to not only use it for college, but afterward as well for their own retirements.
And this talks about parents not utilizing 529 plans, but grandparents can be a part of that well, correct?
You bet. Often we see grandparents involved in those. Mm-hmm. You bet.
72% of households do not have a written financial plan to help them navigate their finances. 72%, while 83% of people that set a financial goal feel better about their finances just after 1 year. So this is something we have total control of. We can decide what our financial goals are and come on in to Prout Financial Design or find a financial firm to get started. It's never too late.
Right. I'm just curious, Nathan, what's a written financial plan? I mean, why is that special? I'm just curious.
Well, as you often allude to, writing down your goals helps keep yourself accountable to achieving those goals. So writing down your financial plan, what you want by a certain age, how much you're going to save, how much debt you're not going to have, those are all important things to write down or You can even take it a step further and get into some financial planning software to see how much you need to save to do certain things in retirement. What are your goals for retirement? You know, that's an important question.
Is it ever? Mm-hmm. It's empowering. I honestly, I love doing those conversations with clients. It's among the highest level for me in terms of enjoyment, because even if they're not going to hit the goal, what adjustments do they need to make in order to do that? And what can they do that makes sense for them? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, it's much more achievable, and it's not nearly the concern, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And or if they've entirely saved enough. Again, what can we do with what there is? What can we do perhaps we hadn't thought about mm-hmm. as another part of that conversation?
And financial plans aren't written in stone. They can be adjusted, as you mentioned, like Dennis, and life happens. Things change, your money and all of that. And so we'll have clients come in and say, can I take a look at that financial plan? We need to readjust some things, right, Nathan?
Yeah, or 2022 will happen to your portfolio. Yeah, and, mm-hmm. and what needs yeah. to be modified. But again, you know, there's good and bad market years and all that sort of thing. But yeah, what adjustments can be made, and often too, once you have that written down, yeah, you might have to make some adjustments to your projections at first. But once you are aware of it and are saving towards those goals, like we've seen it time and time again, like people all of a sudden have $1,000 more per year that they can spend on their vacation goal or whatever it might be.
Yeah, even though it may not sound like a lot, it's enough to make a difference to their lifestyle. And all of a sudden, they've got the flexibility to make those kinds of things, decisions, you bet.
Mm-hmm. Important is just get started.
Absolute.
34% of all Americans, which is more than 100 million people, have $0 in savings to their name. 34%. 69% of households have less than $1,000 in liquid savings as an emergency fund. So what do people do when they have an emergency? The unfortunate answer for most is that they heavily rely on credit card utilization, taking on more debt and putting themselves in an even worse financial position. And that source is Associated Press.
So don't let the negativity, if you will, overtake your financial plans and planning. Take control of it. There's so many things that you can do. Talk to a financial advisor. Look at the Dave Ramsey website. Dave Ramsey, I think it's DaveRamsey.com. If you need to manage your debt. All of these things you can get control of by simply beginning the process.
Absolutely. And this last stat just goes along with what Nathan was sharing about the millennials. It reinforces his statements in that article. 95% of millennials ages 28 through 43 are saving less than the recommended amount. This means that 95% of millennials will be stuck doing one of the three things: a strain on lifestyle closer to a desired retirement age, or reducing a standard of living throughout retirement, or pushing back the retirement age. 66% of all millennials have zero retirement savings. And that source is National Institute of Retirement
wow.
Security.
Speaking of leaving money on the table, so many times they're missing out on matching contributions, perhaps in their 401k plan. They're missing out on the tax deferral they're going to be getting. And, of course, then they're missing out on the potential returns that they can achieve by investing longer term in their 401k plans. Those returns are not guaranteed, of course. We don't know what the returns are going to be in the future. But given history, you move the ball much more toward your own court by taking control of your own situation and doing the best you can with what you have.
And I like what you were saying earlier about you won't miss the money, like in contributions. And I remember first starting out automatic contributions, and I'm like, you
yeah.
know? But if you don't see the money in your checking account, you don't miss it. And, you change your lifestyle with what you see in your checking account.
Yes.
And so it does make sense. So any little bit can help.
That's right.
Especially with those opportunities for things like dollar cost averaging as well.
Mm. Correct. Now, that's the key, dollar cost averaging into stock mutual funds. Now, the only way to profit from that is if you invest through the cycle, through the investment cycle, taking advantage of those mutual funds that tend to have more risk, but cutting back on that risk because you're buying more shares when the price goes down of that particular mutual fund, and continue investing through that cycle, which is the compliance required disclosure. The only way dollar cost averaging works is if you invest through that economic cycle. All right? continue to invest that same amount on a monthly basis. So we've got a few more points to make here on assets that you can take advantage of in tax-aware giving. So from the very first part of the shoe, consider consolidating contributions to donor-advised funds, DAFs. These funds are widely known as a simple tax-smart investment solution for charitable giving are increasingly popular. Contributions reached an all-time high of $85 billion in 2022. But keep in mind that grouping or bunching several years' worth of donations in a single year into a donor-advised fund can offer substantial tax savings for donors. So usually your standard deduction is going to be about, if you're a couple, about $26,000, $27,000. I'm not quite sure what it is right now. It's steadily increased. But if you do give more than that into a donor-advised fund, you're going to get that immediate deduction that year. And you can also use that against a one-time possible bump in your taxable income or the sale of a business. So you might be expecting a lump sum this year and or have already received one. Given that case, you may want to put more than what you're comfortable with giving to any one charity. And let's say you want to give it over a 2 or 3 year period. You could give it all in 1 year, take the full deduction using the donor advised fund, and then gift it to several charities over the coming years and then help them out, but be more thoughtful perhaps in the gifting process. So that's one significant way to take advantage of current tax law.
That's right.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Well, we are going to wrap up here. Prout Financial Design, that's located in Traverse City, Michigan,
947-3992, 231-947-3992, or proutfinancialdesign.com.
Dennis Prout, Nathan Prout, Dion Jennings, thank you all.
Appreciate you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Dollar cost averaging involves continuous investment in securities, regardless of fluctuation in price levels of such securities. An investor should consider their ability to continue purchasing through fluctuating price levels. Such a plan does not assure a profit and does not protect against loss in declining markets. There is no guarantee that a diversified portfolio will enhance overall returns or outperform a non-diversified portfolio. Diversification does not protect against market risk. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. The economic forecast set forth in this material may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful. A Roth IRA offers tax deferral on any earnings in the account. Qualified withdrawals of earnings from the account are tax-free. Withdrawals of earnings prior to the age 59 and a half or prior to the account being opened for 5 years, whichever is later, may result in a 10% IRS penalty tax. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Traditional IRA account owners have considerations to make before performing a Roth IRA conversion. These primarily include income tax consequences on the converted amount in the year of conversion, withdrawal limitations from a Roth IRA, and income limitations for future contributions to a Roth IRA. In addition, if you are required to take a required minimum distribution, RMD, in the year you convert, you must do so before converting to a Roth IRA.